This is McKinsey Recruiting, a podcast created to help you learn more about McKinsey and Company. My name is Philip, and together with Sydney, our other podcast host, I'm here to answer all your questions about McKinsey Recruiting and introduce you to some of our McKinsey personalities. In this episode, we will talk about GLAM, our LGBTQ plus network at McKinsey, which just recently celebrated its 25th anniversary. Our guest today is Alice. She leads our people function for the Eastern Europe, Middle East and Africa region. She joined McKinsey in 2016 in Atlanta and is now working in our Amsterdam office. Alice will tell us more about her wife and how to combine raising four children with a fast-paced career, explain what the LGBTQ plus network at McKinsey is doing, and how all this relates to the question, what you've done at the weekend. Are you ready? Then let's start our podcast, McKinsey Recruiting. Hi, Alice. Great to have you on board of our McKinsey Recruiting podcast, and a warm welcome from Cologne to Amsterdam.
Thank you, Philip.
Alice, in preparation for our podcast, I've asked someone very close to you how they would describe you. I was fortunate to speak to your 12-year-old daughter, Hazel, on Zoom. She said that you always see the bright side, which makes you a great person to be around. She also told me that you are a very funny person. From the touch points I had with you so far, I can only confirm this. But do you think Hazel described you accurately?
Very tricky one. I think she did. I don't know how she picked those things out of the middle of nowhere. I might not be funny to everybody exactly, but it definitely runs in the family. Weirdly, my dad was a stand-up comedian at one point in his life. So
really?
Yeah, for real. So maybe it just runs in the family. I don't know. Maybe she's picking it up. But I definitely, on seeing the bright side of things, I know where she's coming from. It's definitely part of sort of what I believe in and how I try to act.
So greetings to Hazel.
I'll let her know.
Are there any similarities to your spirit animal? I've heard that you love owls.
Again, I say, where did you get this from?
I have my sources.
You do. Indeed. Yeah, you know, I actually do love owls. I don't know that I've actually ever seen an owl in the wild, to be honest with you. I did go to an owl petting place in Tokyo once, but anyway, we got to hold all the owls, which was super cool. But I always have this vision of owls as kind of being visionaries and looking over things and taking care of people and always having a watchful eye. And so I think that's kind of why I think of it as my spirit animal wherever your source got that information.
We're going to get back to Tokyo in just some minutes. You live with your wife and your four children, aged between 12 and 20 in Amsterdam. I also know that your wife is a clinical psychologist. So you are a power dual career couple. What lessons have you learned from being a mother?
Oh, there's so many lessons from being a mother and so many from being a partner, by the way, too. I think there's a lot of maybe empathy and patience that comes from being a parent, a perspective that I never really thought that I would have, really caring about other people. And interestingly, everybody is kind of individual and unique path. I have four kids, as you said, and every single one of them is so different. It's unbelievable. I can't imagine any of them following the same path. And so helping people to find what their kind of North Star is pretty inspirational, both in my career and my home. But it's something that I've really learned from being a parent.
And how do you handle four children with a relatively wide range of ages?
Well, they are 20, 18, 16, and 12. So they are, you know, a little bit packed in on the top there. But I don't know. It's always been a lot of fun. Everybody has always said, I don't know how you do it. And I always have thought, I don't know what the other choice is, because they're here and they're fantastic. And I love spending time with them, and essentially have tried to spend as much time with them, do as much as I can with them, be as interactive as possible, at the same time as kind of pursuing a career.
And how does McKinsey support you with your family?
Actually, it's funny because before I came to McKinsey, it was one of my big questions or worries, because I think the reputation feels like it's going to be so super intense and you're not going to have any time and you're going to be on the road all the time. And it's kind of not exactly what I've found. There is intensity and there is on the roadness, if that's a thing. But I think I have really found a place where people love and care about you and your family. And there's just so much sharing about people and their kids. And we have parties that have kids, picnics with our kids, spouses that meet each other. Just the opportunity for our whole family to be engaged in McKinsey. Actually, even our managing partner does a talk for families of McKinsey, which, by the way, my kids attended once. We're not that excited about, but my parents have attended literally every single one. So there's lots of different ways that I think the firm engages you with your family. And that's been a real surprise to me, actually, since I joined the firm.
Alice, these questions bring me all to your role at the firm. You are currently leading our people function for the Eastern Europe, Middle East, and Africa region. So this means you are responsible for the full range of people activities, recruiting, learning, HR, people development. If my geography knowledge doesn't mislead me, Amsterdam doesn't belong to Eastern Europe, the Middle East, or Africa. How come that you are based in the Netherlands?
You have an amazing sense of geography.
Thank you, Alice.
That is super impressive. It's true, and kind of gets to your point before about the firm being supportive of families. So I live here with my wife and four kids, as you said, and the region that I serve isn't the most LGBTQ friendly in the world. We looked long and hard for places to live in EMA. We have an amazing team of immigration and legal professionals, and we worked long and hard to try to find a place actually in the region where we could live safely. And there was one country where we could live legally, but it was quite far away from all of the others. So in the end, what ended up happening was the firm said, well, find a place where there are some airports that have direct flights into the places that you are serving, and let's see if we can make that work. And here I am in Amsterdam, which has direct flights into so very many places.
Let me follow up on that. I have heard that you described the process of finding the right location for your role and the support McKinsey offered as a hallmark moment. Why is that? How does this describe the culture at McKinsey?
I think it's just as something that is one of the many special things about the firm, which is, you know, whoever you are, there's a way for you to be successful here and a way for your family to be integrated into your life. And it's not a place that would have said, you know, I think there are a lot of places that even I've worked that might have said, well, go to the this other place and you can visit your family. Or that is not what this firm is and not the feel of it. So it really was a moment when I knew that especially we have a LGBTQ network called GLAM. We call ourselves Glammies. That the Glammies really are an appreciated part of the firm, that it's really important to us across the world to find meaningful opportunities and meaningful places that are safe and secure and great communities for our Glammies. So I think I do describe it kind of as a hallmark moment. I think even when it happened, I was quite tearful that the firm would do something that's so meaningful for me as a person, that is, you know, a bit of an inconvenience, maybe even work-wise for the firm.
We're going to talk about glam in just a minute a lot, but now we're going to go back to Japan. You were born in North America, but also lived in various locations around the world, working in different consulting and HR roles. Alice, you have an impressive CV, and you are a language talent. I even heard from a colleague that you've learned Arabic on a language app and finished the whole module in record time. I also know that you can speak Japanese, since I also love Japan. What do you find so intriguing about the country?
Oh,
except the owls, of course.
In addition to the owls, right, and all the little places that you can pet different animals. But yeah, you're right. I did grow up in North America. I'm actually from a very, very small town, and had the opportunity growing up also to live in Japan. And I was 8 at the time when I lived there. It was a very long time ago, a number that I will choose not to mention, but a very long time ago, before there were many people who were not Japanese in Japan. And so I was sort of a unique anomaly. I was terrified, and I went to an all-Japanese school, learned Japanese in record time, and have just always had a love for Japan and things Japanese. I majored in Japanese in college and Asian religion in college. So it's always been sort of an area of passion, Japan, and then actually even broadened that beyond, and have done a lot of work in Asia as well.
And I know that during your 4 years at McKinsey, you visited over 52 of our McKinsey offices worldwide. I know that that's a lot, but are there any differences between the offices?
It's so interesting. It's a good question, because every single office is completely different. But there's this kind of woven golden thread of fabric that goes through every single McKinsey office. It's like a melding of the outside culture and the culture of the firm. And it's so interesting to know everywhere you go in the world. And again, was another surprise, pleasant surprise, but you find people, and the people you find in every single office you know are going to be authentic and creative and intelligent and exciting and fun to talk to and have interesting experiences. And that is super consistent all around the world, even where there are differences in the physical layouts of offices or the locations of offices, the kind and quality of people that you find and the sort of dedication to some of our mission and values is so consistent.
Beside the fact, of course, that all our laptops and mobiles automatically connect to the Wi-Fi.
Sure. But
are there any other unique features every office has?
That's unique about every office?
Well,
there are lots of things unique about every office. I think the way that people interact, some offices have Friday lunches where everybody sits all together. Some offices have groups that go out together on Friday night. Some people have weekday activities. Some folks have town halls every single week. Some have town halls, you know, once a month. Some people have many more, I guess, local kind of topics. So when things happen in a region or in an office, they have a lot more focus on that. If there's some current event that happens, there people who are excited about a particular topic lead lunch and learns, and the topics are very different all around the world.
So there are a lot of regional specialties in every office.
Totally.
A colleague also told me that every time you visit a country, you bring back little gifts for your children from the airport. Anything that is especially memorable?
I have no idea who you've been talking to. I really can't. I'm going to have to work this out later. But it is true. Actually, my entire career since I've had kids, you know, there's a special thing that's called mommy guilt. Don't know if you've heard of it, but It is. But in my case, not yet. But in my particular case, it involves like wherever I go, I bring something back. It's a little bit of the Japanese kind of omiyage culture where you bring back a gift from wherever you go. So I bring back the smallest trinkets. And for each kid, there's sort of a theme. Like I have one kid that loves masks. And so I try to find like a little mask. I have another kid that likes trains. So I try to find a train thing. One that loves princesses. I've found little miniature Barbie dolls from so many countries in so much traditional dress. I didn't even know that existed.
Mommy guilt. I'm just going to write that down.
Oh, that's good, especially memorable. That's a great, great note to take.
So I would like to dive deeper into our focus topic of today's podcast. At McKinsey, we have an LGBTQ plus network called GLAM. You've already introduced us to it. We both know GLAM. We are both members of it, but our listeners may not know it. Would you mind explaining to us what GLAM is all about? What does the network do and how does it support the LGBTQ plus community?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess most people might know about employee resource groups or the general idea of an employee resource group. And this is our LGBTQ employee resource group. It was founded 20 years ago and it is called GLAM because at the time it was gay and lesbian at McKinsey. Obviously, the name has evolved. It now is short for GLBTQ plus at McKinsey. Although that doesn't all fit in the little fancy GLAM acronym, but GLAM is such a great acronym. What are you going to do? But GLAM is sort of an employee resource group, and as are actually all of our employee resource groups, I have to say, with a little bit extra, and I think a little bit extra, something special, in a couple of ways. We are super focused on building community internal to the firm, which I find really exciting. We do that in a lot of ways. Some of them are virtual, some of them are in person, some of them involve meeting even with folks from other companies for drinks and meeting with folks from their employee resource groups. So connectivity is really important, and sort of the internal development of allyship and how we build allies within our firm is part of GLAM, and really important in a lot of markets that I serve, as you could guess, in particular, how we do that in a sort of approachable and legal way, which we do all over the world, how we provide benefits to people, how we support people through all different sorts of parts of their lives, whether they're going through a surrogacy or whether they're going through a gender transition. All of those are really important to us internally. There's a little extra flavor too, which is an external flavor that GLAM has. We have partnerships with external organizations, which I think are very cool. We've done a ton of research. Just look on McKinsey.com or in the McKinsey Quarterly. There's a lot of research out there on diversity and inclusion, and especially on sort of the LGBTQ world and what that means for us. So there's a research component and an external component as well. So anyway, that was a bit of a long-winded way to say we do a ton of stuff and love to be super inclusive of all of our GLAMies internally and externally.
I definitely want to know more about that. But first, why do you personally engage with our LGBTQ plus network? Why is this such an important topic for you?
Well, I think other than being part of the network myself, I guess that was the first reason. The first role I had when I started with the firm was leading our global inclusion and diversity work. So it's diversity in general is a personal passion of mine. But even now that I am moved to a different role, being involved in GLAM and kind of engaged in its leadership and engaged in kind of continuing to build community internally and externally, I just think it's something that we're super uniquely positioned to do. I guess I can't think of a better explanation than that. I feel like it's so so special and so unique here and so so broadly accepting. Our managing partner and so much of our leadership speaks so inclusively in a way that I just haven't heard other places. And somehow I feel like we have the opportunity here to build that, but also then to radiate it around the world and to build, build connections and partnerships across other organizations. It just feels like it's such an open and accepting culture that it's an important one to be part of and to help sustain.
And how does McKinsey support LGBTQs and LGBTQ couples?
Well, many ways. You heard me talk about my own experience, I guess, which is kind of my own hallmark experience. But we, where we can, we obviously always support our same-sex partnerships. We have a huge group of GLAM allies, as they're called, and that engage pretty actively in allyship. We do a lot of education, even actually in the very beginning, when you first join the firm as part of our onboarding, there's learning and introduction to GLAM and to other affinity networks as well, and how we think about them. So it's sort of throughout the life cycle of time at the firm. There are different ways that we engage. We have meetings together, conferences together, and whether it's online or whether it's in person, there's just lots of opportunities for sort of connection. So I think GLAM supports folks like that. And then in other special moments in people's lives, I think my move was a special moment in my life. People having children, GLAMies having children are special moments in their lives, whether it's through whatever way they choose to do that. But it's the firm is supportive in so many ways of surrogacy as an example, but we're also really supportive of gender transitions and of people who are going through that process, even just from a systems perspective, how we update.
Let me just interrupt you here for a second.
Yeah, yeah.
Let us dive a bit deeper into that, because in the run-up to the episode, you've told me that one of your favorite GLAM moments is the support and mentorship of gender transitions at the firm. Can you tell us a bit more about that? How does the firm deal with transitions?
Oh yeah, of course. I think it's very interesting, and it's again quite market dependent how broader culture deals with gender transition. So you have to take that into account when thinking about it, and that is separate from how the firm deals and how the firm manages and helps people through gender transitions. But we have where we can, we support people through with all of the therapies that they need, any surgeries that they need. We are super supportive in terms of name changes, preferred pronouns. We even have, you've probably seen on our messaging platform, you can actually put your preferred gender pronoun in there. Even on our directory, you can put a preferred gender pronoun in there. So not just supporting people in transition, but also people who identify as non-binary. The firm really is a super supportive place to be, both from sort of a spirit perspective, and also from a really technical perspective in terms of supporting people from benefits and more sort of system changes and some of the things that actually you would think wouldn't be that complicated, but in many places are actually sort of the most frustrating and difficult parts of a transition.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you've also told us that GLAM is not just about McKinsey, but also tries to create positive impact outside the firm. I would like to go into a subtopic here and like to talk about LGBTQs and career advancement. And it's about being LGBTQ+ in the workplace. Working as a consultant at McKinsey means that you are often with clients and in team rooms with other consultants. What is your advice for LGBTQs in a work environment? And how does this relate to the often quoted question, what someone has done over the weekend?
Yeah, so I was going to say, well, before I say ways to work, I will say some of the challenges, because I think we all know that there's a challenge with, you know, what did you do over the weekend? And do I say I went, you know, whatever, fishing or skiing or hiking with my wife, or do I say with my spouse? And I can't even express the number of times before I came to McKinsey that people asked, what does your husband do? They just assume that that's what your husband does. And we've worked really, really hard to use the word partner here, or to just not assume that somebody has a partner, just to say, what did you do over the weekend? Or, you know, and try to not be so so gendered and so specific like that. So, but also, I think the other problem, I guess, that people come across is that you're often an only person in a lot of circumstances. And when you work in a corporation and you go to the same place and you go to the same seat and you go the same every day, people get to know you, and people then know not to ask anymore eventually, what does your husband do? It's different in consulting, because what's challenging is you're always going someplace new. I went to, 52 different places. So that means I've been asked a lot of times, what my partner does. But in consulting, when you go, you meet new people. It's like coming out kind of again and again and again. And so I think a really important part of GLAM is that we serve as a support for people as they go through that process, and that we make sure that it's comfortable, that people who are staffing our GLAMies make sure that they're going to places that are comfortable. One of the things I really have come to respect too about the firm is that if someone's not comfortable going a particular place or doing a particular study, that we never force somebody to do that. Not because just because of GLAM, but that's part of it. And so I guess I would say broadly in the workplace, looking for allies, looking for people who really understand you, being open and being honest about who you are, being thoughtful about how you interact with other people and how you want other people to interact with you, and being specific. If you prefer a gender pronoun, tell people you prefer that gender pronoun, or there's no way they'll ever know that. So kind of individually being proactive, and then also looking for allies and people who can support you in your journey.
And any other tips from your side, or just a question, is it better to be out at the workplace or should I stay in the closet?
I think that's such a personal choice. It's super complicated. Even for myself, right? I'm married to a woman, have four kids. I have pictures all over my phone. There are places and countries that I go to where I certainly wouldn't talk openly about it. If somebody in the office asked me, then of course I would talk to them. But, I think I always say outside of the office, there are lots of places in the world where you have to be careful. And there are lots of places in the world where you don't. And if you have to understand the outside climate you're operating in. But to me, it's always, and I can't tell anybody else what to do, obviously. But for me, it has always been the best to just be authentic and to be honest. And if people don't like that authenticity and that honesty or what that means, then I think that has more to do with them than it has to do with you. And so I for myself prefer the open route, but even sometimes it's not the thing that I personally lead with, but I think it is such a personal decision. But I will say, for people who come here, for people who start in any new job, really anywhere, to figure out what the culture is like, and then and find a mentor, find an ally, find somebody that can help you to make that decision and to think it through. Talking about it is super important.
Thank you for being so open about this, Alice. Now we're going to have a hard cut, and we come to my favorite section of the podcast, which is called Ask Me Anything. We went on the virtual streets with our podcast and asked people what they want to know about McKinsey, and I would love to introduce you to those special guests. Are you ready for your free Ask Me Anything questions?
I have no idea. I'm about to find out.
Great. So the first question comes from Vitan. He studies in the UK.
Hello, McKinsey. I'm Vitan. I'm an undergraduate at the University of Warwick, UK. And my question is as follows. as a heterosexual, how can I be an effective ally of the LGBTQ network at McKinsey?
Well, great question, Vitan, and it matches perfectly with our episode. So, Alice, how can Vitan as a hetero show allyship in general?
Well, you can help me answer this one, Philip, too. But look, I can just send it right back to you. I like that. So that is a good, it's a great question, Vitan. There are lots and lots of ways to show allyship. We actually have a formal allies network where you get tips all the time about how you can be a good ally. We even have computer stickers that you can stick on your computer to show that you are a
beautiful, lamb. Colorful right? lamb allyship cups that I'm showing now into the Zoom camera.
There you go. That you're a, you know, you can just show that you're a glam ally. So there are lots of ways to do that. Reaching out to people who are part of the glam community, do even offering to do a lunch and learn. Bring a speaker in who talks about something that is a tough topic for whatever your geography is. Always super helpful and super appreciated. Even if you don't know somebody or know that somebody's out, you can still make an impact.
Great. Thank you, Vitan, for your question. The second question comes from Sheetal. She studies business in France.
Hi, I'm Sheetal from France. I'm currently in my final year of business management studies, and I'm curious to know if it is recommended to apply with referral or not.
So, a classic recruiting question. Should someone apply with a referral or not? Or in other words, does it help in the recruiting process to have a referral?
So I would say in general, it's always nice to have the opportunity to know somebody because then you know what a place is authentically like. So for any place, it's nice to know somebody. I think for us, there are lots of ways to get to know us. We have a lot of events. We have a careers blog. We have social media. There are lots and lots of ways to get to know us and to apply. So I don't think a referral is necessary. It's always nice to get to know a place and have somebody else's perspective on it, though.
Great. So now we come to the third question. It comes from Vita, a participant from Next Generation Women Leader Asia Pacific.
Hi, this is Vita from NGWL 2020 Asia Pacific, and I have a question to McKinsey team. Actually, I really want to know the exact entire process of the recruitment from the CV screening until the last interview. And then maybe you could also give us a hint of how to prepare for each stage of the recruitment. Thank you so much.
Okay, Vita, this is a broad question, but it fits perfectly into our recruiting podcast. But maybe we can narrow it down a bit. Alice, we both know that for our various roles and regions at McKinsey, we have somewhat different processes. If we look at a classic consulting role after graduation, how does this process look like and what is your personal tip for preparing?
Sure. So we have a absolute, I don't want to say a ton, but we have many, many career paths at the firm. But for this purpose, I'll talk about our consulting roles specifically. Everything sort of starts in the same way. We apply for a consulting role via our career site. We have generally a CV review where we look at things like academics, job experiences, all the extras that you might think about, some extracurricular activities, volunteer activities, special interests, languages, all of that. We then do an online assessment, which is a game sort of thing that tests your problem solving skills. Then we have two rounds of interviews followed by another round of interviews where you always meet with our partners. So the process is pretty consistent and actually pretty consistent around the world. And in terms of advice, I would say always be your authentic self. That kind of shows through. Bring your confidence, bring everything that you know, everything that you are, kind of who you have developed to be, even, you know, if you have family, who they are, that all kind of lives inside of you. And bringing the best of you and your past is what's really important. And that authenticity really shows through. So that would be my best advice.
No acting.
That's right.
Okay, so that's it for our Ask Me Anything section, but I would like to ask you the final roundup question. We at McKinsey know the classic McKinsey technique of top-down communication, where you sum up the key message of what you want to say, preferably at the beginning of a presentation. So now it's my final question. What is it that you would like our listeners to get out of our podcast episode today?
I guess I would say that the ultimate road, wherever you are in life and listening to this, whether you're a student, whether you're a professional, whoever you are, there are lots of roads kind of to happiness and lots of roads that lead you there. To me, the kind of elements of positivity, of patience, of perseverance, and really, I can't stress enough, of authenticity, to me are the path that kind of really bring you to the place that is going to be most fulfilling for you. And that's one of the things that I think McKinsey does incredibly well, is to help people to find the path that really leads to them, to you specifically.
So thank you for those beautiful last words. Unfortunately, we have reached the end of today's recruiting podcast episode. Thank you, Alice, for your openness. It was an utmost pleasure to get to know you further and introduce you to our listeners.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you have more questions or ideas for our show, drop us a line on our podcast page, mckinsey.com/recruitingpodcast. To learn more about our diversity recruiting efforts, how to apply, and tons of other information, check out mckinsey.com/careers.